Good morning and welcome to Viewpoint, a weekly public service program heard each Sunday morning on WHMI. It's brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best unlimited network with two locations in Howell. I'm your host, John Kent. Coming up on this morning's show, WHMI's Mike Kruseman has a chat to talk about Brighton's Street Millage here on WHMI's Viewpoint.
I'm with Jim Bone and John Emus from Brighton City Council. And you guys have an important vote coming up on May 7th, a millage request of the residents of Brighton. I guess give us an overview of the details of this millage request.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us and the opportunity to talk about this to the community. This upcoming vote on the new Headley override millage request is actually in response to the feedback we received from voters in the community following last August 7th's request for a Headley override. Kind of starting at the background of how we got here is the city is facing significant financial difficulties since the recession in 08, like many other cities, municipalities around the state. We, as a council last year, brought a Headley millage override request to the voters for the full Headley override. For those who don't know what Headley is technically our city charter that was passed back in the 50s allows the city to charge up to 20 mills for property taxes. When Headley went in place several years ago, Headley basically said that they were going to control the millage rates of cities, the ability to collect property taxes based on certain economic growth indicators. And over time, those Headley, what they're called Headley rollbacks, over time, the Headley rollbacks have reduced down, despite what our city charter says, what our voters originally voted for. The state has told our community that we can only charge approximately 15.6 mils. In fact, we just got notice that the state is putting another Headley rollback in place. They're going to reduce our millage rate even more. So what that means is if the city at any point wants to utilize anything above the Headley millage rate, but within our charter millage rate, we have to go to the voters and ask for what's called a Headley override. In this particular case, we're facing a little over a $2 million budget shortfall. And as you can see, if you drive around the city of Brighton, a lot of our roads are slowly deteriorating. Since the 2008 recession, the economic crash, the city took a hit to its revenue just like all the homeowners did. The difference is in the last 10 years, as homeowners' values came back up for resale, Prop A has kept us from the tax above value from going up. So while most people's homes have come back about to the 2007 levels, we're collecting around 30 to 35% less in revenue than we were 10 years ago, even with the same home values. So as you can imagine, roads continue to deteriorate. Cost of living increases to police officers and city staff go up. The price of asphalt goes up. Price of salt has really gone up. And so we're now in a spot where we're seeing some significant long-term fiscal problems and challenges for the city. This new Headley override was response to last August where the Headley override didn't pass by 128 votes. We were told to go back and rework our system, and myself and actually Councilmember Bone were part of a task force that took the lid off every city expenditure there was. We came up with a three-part plan of $500,000 in new revenue where we could find it. We are asking city departments and city staff to take approximately $500,000 in cuts, both to kind of their buildings and as well to some of their personal income as well. And then we're coming back to the voters to complete that with a much lower Headley override ask of only 2.5 mils, which will be about 1.185 million in revenue. This isn't going to be an instant fix. It's designed to be a long-term solution to slowly start improve our roads back to a quality level as opposed to where they're at now.
Is this the last one was for roads only? This one for roads only also?
Yes, this will be for roads only. And from my perspective, it's going to be focused on local streets, neighborhood streets. There may be some of the revenue for major streets, but the primary focus is going to be on local neighborhood streets. And in fact, at our last council meeting last week, Thursday, if this millage is approved by the voters on May 7th, the first two projects that we've identified that we're going after are neighborhood streets, neighborhood improvements. One would be the Northwest Neighborhoods, which is west of the railroad tracks and north of Main Street, and then 3rd Street, Fairway Trails, all the way up to Pepper Grove and Alpine as well.
I was going to ask how you guys are going to decide which streets get the treatment first. Is there a more comprehensive street plan, like, beyond those two?
Oh, absolutely. Within the past 2 years, the city had contracted with an engineering organization to come in to do an evaluation on the condition of our street roads. So we know what the condition of every road and street is in the city. And then based on anticipated revenue, if this millage gets passed, we looked at projects based both on need and on our ability to pay for those street and road improvements.
And this request is also, the last one was for 10 years. This is just for 7 years?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things we got back in terms of the feedback from the voters, kind of listening to where they were coming from, is it seemed like a long time. And I think almost all of us on council, and we hear a lot of different things and different opinions from different perspectives. And, you know, we're just simply looking at the voters and saying, if 10 years is too long, 7, you know, whatever the time frame is. Because our goal is that with the millage, if it's approved, that we will demonstrate the performance, we'll demonstrate the successes. So that in 7 years, I have the utmost confidence coming back and say, here's what we've done. Here's what you trusted us with. Here's what we did. Here's what we said we were going to do. We've accomplished that, and let's go for another 7 years. So whether it's 10 years, whether it's 7 years, the idea is that if we want to keep Brighton as a quality community, we're going to have to spend money ourselves to do so.
And one of the other things that we heard from the last August millage proposal was that there were some in the community that felt that the millage language in the proposal wasn't tight enough. They felt there was room to maneuver, so to speak. So one of the things that we did as well was we tightened up the language so it's very specific in the ballot proposal on what this millage will be used for. So there won't be any room for creative interpretation in terms of the money going into the general fund being spent on something else other than local and major streets.
And, you, again, correct me if I'm wrong here, like, you guys set this. This is 2.5 mils you're asking for, and you set that back up. That's still also subject to Headley overrides in the future, so that could even, you know.
That could drop as well, yes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct. And then, like I said, this year is a perfect example where literally this millage is on the ballot right now, and we just got notice from the state that there's going to be another Headley rollback reducing our millage rates again this year. So even that 2.5, Lansing can continue to reduce that.
We've heard from other local officials, like I know we talk with Howell often, and they talk about a broken state funding model. How much of that is a factor with the city of Brighton? And
over the years, where the state falls short is on the statutorial revenue sharing, where they have wiggle room that they take advantage of, where they basically, I'll use the words, shortchange local units of government with the revenue sharing, where we don't get the full allotment. And if you look back over the last 20 years, the city of Brighton has probably lost out well over $1 million in revenue sharing. And we're not the only ones. And I know for a fact that the Michigan Municipal League has raised this loud and clear that the state has responsibility to fund revenue sharing, and they do on the constitutional side, but on the statutorial side, they don't meet their requirements. And then the other factor here that may influence the voters is Whitmer's proposal to have a 45-cent increase on the gas tax. And basically what I've read is that that proposal, if it was passed, would generate somewhere around $2.3 billion in revenue for roads, of which they're going to spend $1.9 billion of the $2.3 on roads. Where the other $400 million goes to, who knows? And then They want to basically redo the Act 51, which is the way the state allocates the money down to the local units of government, where they think that Act 51 model is broken and they want to spend the money on the most heavily trafficked roads, which means for the city of Brighton, that may restrict that money if money flows from the state just to Grand River. So we're going to be on the hook for everything else in the city, which basically, in my view, if that 45-cent per gallon gas tax goes into effect, the city of Brighton is going to basically get nothing from that. So we're left on our own to fix the street problem that we have.
So,
yeah, I just want to add in, a lot of people just for kind of educational purposes, the whole concept of the revenue sharing was kind of a very historical bargain for exchange between local units of government and the state. And a lot of it came out of the concept of the sales tax. The reason why, you know, the city of Brighton or other places that have these great downtown shopping areas, we can't charge a local sales tax to capture any of the money coming in through the city. What the state said a long time ago is that, no, we'll do a 6% sales tax for everybody. That money will flow up to Lansing, and then we'll take some of that money and give it back to you, you know, for these small little, you know, commercial areas in these places. And that's where a lot of that money was supposed to come from. And when you look at the statistics, and Michigan Municipal League has been great data collector on this as well, the state of Michigan is one of the absolute worst states in the nation on revenue sharing as part of that sales tax scheme, as part of the taxing scheme to local municipalities. And part of that is the reason they've been able to balance their budget in Lansing while watching all the dollars that used to come to municipalities to help us pay for local roads, to pay for police officers, to pay for water and power. That's all pretty much dried up.
So what is the expected tax burden for this on the Brighton homeowner?
Well, if the millage passes, it would be basically 2.5 mils. And the annual impact on a home, say, that has a taxable value of, say, $90,000, the annual impact to the homeowner would be roughly $230 a month or, excuse me, $230 a year.
A year.
Yep, and $19 a month.
And so they have to ask themselves, yep, is that worth it for, you know, improved roads across? Because they're in pretty rough shape. Yep. I live in Brighton, too. Are you concerned that this will appear at the same time as a millage request from the fire authority?
I have a lot of concern. And personally, just one of seven. And we had discussion about this at a council meeting back in January. I was disappointed that the fire authority went in May. My preference would have been for them to go either in August or November. I think in Livingston County and certainly within the city of Brighton, if there's a public safety millage on, I don't want to say it's an automatic slam dunk that it'll get approved, but I think the voters have a soft spot in their heart and they recognize the value and the service that we get from our public safety groups, whether it's police or fire. And I believe that proposal will actually pass. Now that you have two on the ballot in May, I think it makes our chances a little bit less. I think the voters are going to look at two, and they're going to see the difference in the millage rates, and they're going to say yes to fire and potentially no to the streets. So I was a little disappointed. I would have preferred that they would have went in August or November.
You know, I'm going to give a opposing point of view, one of the other seven.
Yep.
And I premise this on, you know, it's funny, the feedback we get sometimes on city council is that we are looked at sometimes like we're out-of-towners, like we're tourists. We've been brought in here to run the city, and that's it. But we're not. I mean, every single one of us, according to statute, we live in the city. This is our city. I volunteer a lot of our time, if you saw our pay, to be city servants and to look out for our city. And at the end of the day, you know, the fire millage and the city's millage, both organizations need it pretty badly. And that's just the reality of the economic times that we're in. It's the reality of how government and governmental servants have been left after the recession. It's a reality from how Lansing treats us locally. And to me, the ultimate question as a resident of the city of Brighton is, am I willing to pay to have nice roads? Am I willing to pay to have my own police department? And am I willing to pay to have a great fire department? I am. I think Brighton is a place where, you know, just like our logo, quality is a way of life, and I'm willing to pay, you know, an extra, let's say, $25 a month, although my taxable value is not as high as 90, so mine will be a bit less than that. But I'm happy to pay that money for the amount of money that we spend on our cellular phones and what some people, I think, pay on coffee on a weekly basis. I think asking, you know, essentially $20 a month for a well-equipped fire department, for decent roads, and for a good, responsive police department in the city that I want to live in, where I want to raise my child in, I'm happy to spend the money myself.
What happens if this fails?
So I'll take this one, the bearer of bad news. The reality is right now is the answer is twofold. One, we just are finishing up our budget preparations for the upcoming fiscal year for Brighton. Brighton runs on a July 1 to a June 30th fiscal year. We are, and we have prepared our budget on the assumption that this has not passed. This year's budget, what we're looking at already is we've cut everything that has been deemed not even necessary is even a hard word to use. At this point, we've cut the Brighton Senior Center, where money went to feed our senior citizens. We are cutting into the Imagination Station reserves at this point. We went to the departments and asked them to make the $500,000 in cuts. We are going to be slowly losing police officers. We are going to be phasing out the canine program. We are reducing service levels and at DPW. The reality is that even with those cuts, assuming this doesn't pass, which is the second part of the answer, is those cuts are only going to continue to get worse. This is not a problem that we can just, you know, take the ostrich approach and put our heads in the sand and say, well, it'll fix itself next year, or it'll fix itself with new city council members, or it'll fix itself with a different election. It won't. The fiscal forecast is what it is. It's out there. It's for everybody to see. And as you look at it and you look at the data, this is only going to continue to get worse. So unless Lansing changes how it treats us locally and we're left on our own, we're going to need this, or we're just going to continue to see a deterioration in services to the city.
And in terms of the roads, my view, if this does not pass, is that on a major road like Grand River, or on roads that may need utility work like Rickett Road, that we're going to have to do some repair work on this summer because we have a sewer line that's failing from 1939 that's going to result in the Rickett Road being basically torn up, the sewer replaced, and then a new road put down. On projects like Grand River, Rickett Road, there may be an opportunity for grant money from the state where the match from the city might be 20% or 30%. We could probably cobble up money to match that grant, so we can get the grant money to do that. But in terms of neighborhood streets, if this doesn't pass, the most that I think a resident would see in the city is just going to be minor repairs on an emergency basis and some crack sealing. Any kind of major reconstruction work or a mill and overlay of asphalt, we certainly won't have the money for that.
If it passes, how soon can we see work in action?
They based on our plan that got approved, what would get teed up for next year would be 3rd Street, Fairway Trails and Alpine to Pepper Grove. And then the initial engineering work for the Northwest neighborhoods would happen next year. Once that engineering work is complete, construction probably in the Northwest neighborhoods would take place in 2021. So we have plans in place.
How can people learn more if they're interested?
Well, my recommendation would be twofold. There's information at the city website. Just go to the City of Brighton website, and right on the main page there's a scrolling banner that has information both on the street millage, and it also has a tax calculator, so residents can plug in their taxable values and they can see exactly what the street millage proposal would result in terms of a tax increase for them.
Is there anything else you guys would like to add?
No, I just add on to Councilmember Bowen, our city manager, Nate Geinzer, so he's available. Contact him by phone. I've always said as well, as long as I'm on city council and public servant, I'm open to any questions, comments, ideas. You know, I have an office locally. My home is local, and I'm not hard to find, so I'm readily available myself as well. But the only thing at the end of the day I ask people is I'll tell you that I'm voting yes. I just ask at the end of the day people vote and make it informed. You know, come to our city council meetings. Our budget's online. Where we spend money is online. Everything we do is transparent and out there. If you don't have access to the internet, come to my office. I'll print one off. I'll pay for the copies myself. I just want people to be well-informed, to understand the challenges that we face, understand that we are city residents. We don't put millage requests on the ballot lightly. And that we're asking the same of ourselves and everyone else in the city. So get involved, be informed, and get out and vote one way or the other. But personally, I'm voting yes.
And my take on the millage proposal is I look at it for a bit from a moral perspective, in that I believe we have a moral responsibility to get this thing passed, because if we don't, all we're doing is basically kicking the can down the road and nothing's going to get done, and we're going to leave a huge bill for the next generation of Brighton residents. And we need to start spending money to fix the streets and roads in the city. And I think it's unfair to saddle today's burden on the next generation. It's morally wrong to do that. So just from my perspective, we have a moral responsibility to get this thing passed.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. We'll encourage everyone to go out there May 7th and make a vote. And, you know, we wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
We're talking with Lisa Ludwinski, the founder of Sister Pie Bakery in Detroit. And she'll be sharing her experiences as a baker, entrepreneur, and free-spirited community member after hours at the Howell Library May 18th. And you've got a book out called Sister Pie, The Recipes and Stories of a Big-Hearted Bakery in Detroit. Welcome to the show. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about Sister Pie Bakery. First of all, where is it located?
It's located in the West Village of Detroit, which is just west of Indian Village. It's actually on the east side of Detroit, and it's at Parker and Percival. Those are the cross streets.
Now, you started this out of your parents' kitchen?
I sure did. I was living in Brooklyn, New York for 6 years after college. I went to Kalamazoo College, and then I moved back home with my parents in Milford, and I started baking pies and cookies and sort of writing my business plan and just kind of testing the waters. I wanted to take every step of the process really slowly because, you know, I'd never opened a business before and wanted to kind of make sure that I liked doing it, but also that people were liking what I was doing.
And obviously met with a good reception to what you were doing.
Yeah. People were really excited about the pies. I think, you know, it's you don't find too many places that are still making pies with handmade crust, fruit that's only in season, and sort of interesting flavors. And so I think for a lot of people, it was kind of a exciting new product. And so I was able to put a lot of love into the recipes, and people really were receptive to that.
And now you didn't come to this without some training. You while you were in New York, you put in your time.
I put in my time, yeah. I mean, I think you can always put in more time, and I probably could have put in more time, but I'm a little bit impatient in that way, so I wanted to just get started. But, you know, I worked at several food establishments just behind the counter for quite a few years, and then I worked at Momofuku Milk Bar, which is a pretty famous place now globally. And I worked behind their counter and then moved back into the kitchen and learned a lot just about kind of how to make different things, but also just what working in a professional kitchen is like. And that was a really formative experience for me. In a lot of ways, it sort of told me, you know, what I would want to do with my business, and also some things that I maybe wouldn't want to do. And so I think you learn a lot from that. And I also worked at a little pie shop for a couple of months and really kind of honed my pie dough skills there. But pretty soon after kind of dipping my toes in the culinary world professionally, I knew that I wanted to embark on my own adventure.
Why pie?
Well, I love pie. I mean, for
well,
sure.
Who doesn't?
It's a delicious thing. But I think at Sister Pie, it's important to us for two main reasons. The first one is that Michigan is the second most agriculturally diverse state in the whole country. And so, you know, we've got lots of fruits and vegetables to work with. I mean, most of those land, you know, between April and October. So there's a significant chunk of the year where we don't have as much to work with, but we do have those storage vegetables. So we have this ability with pie to kind of take any fruit or vegetable and put it in a pie crust. It's very kind of simple to do that. There's just like endless room for creativity. Not to mention we get to work and partner with these great local farmers, kind of the small business version of farm, and that's really important to us. The pie tastes better because the fruit's in season. Everybody wins. And then I think the second reason that we make pie is because it's inherently communal. You know, it's made together, it's eaten together, it kind of just demands to be shared in every aspect of it. And that's something that really kind of inspires and helps to promote our mission as a business to kind of be this friendly and welcoming space.
Now, is there a Motor City specific type of pie?
Not really. I mean, not that I'm aware of. I think that we're kind of working to answer the requests that people have, and I think that we haven't quite established what that Motor City pie is yet.
So even just regionally, say Midwest, I mean, I'm like you, I like pie. But, you know, and just in terms of like the different, are there regional differences, you know, in terms of the pie tastes?
I think there are regional differences, you know, and like Pennsylvania Dutch area, you've got shoe fly pie. In the South, you have chess pie, which is like a sweet pie made with a little bit of cornmeal as the thickener. And there's, you know, a bunch of other, there's Kentucky Derby pie. There's lots of different regional ones. And so we take a lot of inspiration from, you know, different regions and their pies. And there's, you know, sweet potato pie in the South, you know, lots of different ones. And I think for us, you know, apple pie, really kind of apple and cherry pie in the summer and the fall really kind of speak to the Michigan culture because we're such big producers of both of those fruits. And so I think those are two pies I really think of when I think about Michigan pie.
So the book, again, Sister Pie, from Lisa Ledwinsky, you've broken this up. It's not just a collection of recipes. I mean, you kind of break down the entire process of pie from the ingredients to the creation of it and then on to the recipes.
It's true. I know that pie dough and rolling out pie dough is probably the most intimidating part about making pie. And so I wanted to make sure that I devoted a whole chapter to just talking about that alone. And I think something that is a benefit to me not having as much official culinary experience and specifically not having gone to culinary school is that I was able to really write the pie dough recipe from sort of the home baker's perspective. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback about that from readers of the book, that the recipe is very approachable and thorough. And so I think kind of choosing to use some different language has really helped make that more, a little bit more safe for people to try.
And, you know, in the book, in the section, especially with the crust or rolling out the dough, you know, it's very nice to, you've got a lot of pictures here in terms of just step by step how to do each one. Because like you said, it can be intimidating. So
yeah.
For those folks who might be intimidated to, so it be very helpful to have that step by step picture right there to show them as they go along with the process.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, learning is about, for a lot of people, it's a very visual experience. And so being able to see the things that you're looking for is super important part of the process, especially as you, you know, want to practice over and over again and get better at it.
Well, I think a lot of us, you know, have trying to follow a recipe who are not, you know, culinary experts and amateurs at the best. And sometimes you get recipes and you feel like they're IKEA directions, where it's like, like this could be interpreted like 10 different ways. And but if they would just show me a picture of it, and then you go, oh, yeah. I see. Ah, that's
exactly
what you meant.
Yep.
So when you are coming to the Howell Library again, May 18th, what can people expect if they come on out?
Well, it's going to be a great time. I'm going to, talk a little bit about the history of Sister Pie and how the business came to be. Also talk about the cookbook writing process. I like to read a little bit from the book, and then I usually open it up to a rousing round of questions, which is probably my most favorite part of the night. I think there's going to be some sort of refreshments involved that I'm going to be bringing from Sister Pie, so it should be a good time, and also sign books at the end.
All right, something to look forward to. Well, thank you so much again, Lisa Lidwinski, author of Sister Pie from the Sister Pie Bakery in Detroit, and again at the Hal Carnegie District Library, May 18th for a presentation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this edition of Viewpoint, brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best unlimited network with two locations in Howell. Opinions expressed on Viewpoint are not necessarily those of WHMI staff, management, or its advertisers. Until next Sunday, I'm John King on WHMI, Livingston County's own 93.5.